The morning talk. And as you all know by now, try not to plan things but let them flow. And many times the morning talk can reflect some of the questions which were asked the night before, or questions which come up in interviews, because your questions and interviews are on those pieces of paper, give you some feedback to see how things are going. And also just what areas you want me to focus on. And the question which I, a couple of questions which I remember from last night was, you know, the technical questions, which I think should be answered. You know, what do we teach here? Is this vipassana? Well, what is it? And what is the difference between samatha and vipassana? And is this satipatthana? What actually is it? And there's so much confusion comes around because of this, but you know, we follow just the teachings of the Buddha here from the suttas and also practice it according to our own experience and the teachings of people like Ajahn Chah. So it's got a pretty good foundation. But what are we practicing here? So today I'm going to talk about Anapanasati. So don't worry if you don't like watching the breath. There's so many tricks of the trade which we learn. So how you can watch the breath? Remember this one fellow who was here some time ago, and he had so much trouble watching the breath. He just could not do it. Trying this, trying that. He never told me who this teacher was, but whoever it was, they get my respect. Because this teacher said, just sit down, close your eyes, relax, don't try to watch the the breath. You've been trying that for far too long, so don't try to watch the breath. Instead, imagine you're watching the breath. Imagine what it must be like to watch the breath. Just imagine it. Imagine what it must feel like for people who can watch the breath. So imagine it. Use your imagination. And so he started imagining he was watching the breath. And after a couple of minutes, the teacher interrupted him and said, what are you watching? He said, the breath. What it was a psychological block. You know, thinking, oh, I can't watch the breath. I tried and I can't do it. And that's sort of the belief, that psychology stopped him from watching the breath. So all he needed to do was to get tricked into just imagining he was watching the breath. And there he was watching the breath. And now that's, I'm going to probably pick up on those sorts of techniques later on, maybe not today, but maybe later on in the talks we give here, how you use, you know, your mind to actually to overcome these blocks with what is called skillful means. But with the Anapanasati, you know, that it's such a core meditation teaching. And first of all, some people think, oh, Anapanasati. Mindfulness of the breath, that is samatha. And insight, vipassana, is satipatthana. Now, that might sound sort of interesting, but that too is gomayang. And you can find out for yourself simply by looking at the actual suttas itself. Anapanasati Sutta 118 of Majjhima Nikaya. You can look it up for yourself if you want to. And there you'll find anyone who practices Anapanasati, the mindfulness of the breath, also at the same time completes the four Satipatthanas. So you do Anapanasati, at the same time you're doing mindfulness, the four foundations of mindfulness. They are the same, equivalent. You do one, you do the other. So said the Buddha. So you can't argue with that. You can argue with me, you can argue with all sorts of people, but the Buddha, whew, that must be right. And it is right. And he explains why. So there is no such thing as just samatha and vipassana. They just always go together. And for those of you who are really interested, I don't usually quote the commentaries, but in the commentary that they came across this as Venerable K. Minda, an old Sri Lankan monk who passed away some years ago. And I'm wonderful actually to meet him once when I was in Vajivarama temple in Colombo. And he pointed out the simile of the two messengers. And it was a simile like a king had a young son, a prince. And he wanted to let the prince, you know, learn the trade of rulership, because one day the prince would take over the empire. So he sent the prince to one of the border principalities, one of the little regions a long way from the capital, so that he had a small little place to rule, so he could learn how to rule a kingdom. So later on, you know, learning there, he could actually take over the big business. And I've seen that before. You know, people who are big business people, they give their son, their daughter, there's one person, they gave him a little pizza shop in Kelmscott, you know, to see if he can manage that. And because they invited us for a diner there to bless the place, and I thought, oh, we can have a nice lunch today, Western food, pizza. But he wasn't really sort of up to scratch, because that's what he gave us, a couple of slices of pizza for our one meal of the day. That was good. That was wonderful. I could lose a bit of weight. Always think positive. But anyway, so he sent his son off the border kingdom just to learn. Couldn't make too much mess there. But after a couple of months, you know, the leaders, a couple of the head men and leaders of that principality came to the emperor and said, look, you know, your son needs some help, needs some guidance. All he's doing is having parties, playing around, not doing anything for the kingdom. Just like if you have a son or a daughter and you send them off to university for the first time. Yay, free from mum and dad. And they go a bit wild for a couple of weeks. Sometimes a bit longer. But, you know, it's like freedom from authority. So he was playing around. The king said, okay. The emperor said, okay. So he sent one of his wisest ministers to this border kingdom to instruct his son. So after a week or two, when the minister got there, he told his son, I've come from your father, the emperor. It's all right to enjoy the pleasures of being a sort of a ruler in this kingdom, but you also have to do the work as well. You have to govern and do it fairly and just, you know, make sure everything is organized properly. And the little prince said, who do you think you are? I don't care where you're from. Get out of here. Nick off. This is my principality. He wouldn't listen to the minister. So the minister went back, reported to the emperor, so your son is not listening to me. And so the emperor said, okay, I'm going to send you back again, but this time with the fiercest, battle-hardened general from my army. So the two of them went there. The general and the minister. And when they arrived in the palace again, and when they saw the prince, they said, you're back again, look, I told you, get out of here. I'm not listening to you. Don't care who you're from. At which point, the general took the prince by the throat, put his sword to the prince's head, and said, I don't care who you think you are. I've come from your father. Listen to this minister. And the prince, I'm listening, I'm listening. When you've got a sword to your head, you listen. And so the minister had the opportunity to instruct the young prince on the duties. He knew all about the pleasures, but the duties as well of being a prince. And the prince understood, and he was a very good prince after that, and eventually became the emperor. And that was a simile. The minister is wisdom, insight, vipassana. It's not enough to instruct the prince. You need samatha, the general, hold you tight by the throat, stillness, oh yeah, okay, now I know what I'm supposed to be doing. And that was a Buddha simile in the suttas, in the commentaries about the two messengers, to be able to teach someone who'd rather not know what the truth is, rather just enjoy the pleasures of the senses, mess around, get angry, whatever you want to do. But the samatha holds you still. So you do need both of them. And that is so clear when, and this is just repeated again and again. I know this in Pali because, you know, it just flows in Pali much better. It's first of all, Sukhino Chittang Samadhiyati. And I'll come across this again, explain it again, maybe a whole talk on that. It's from happiness that the mind becomes still. That's a powerful saying, because I always thought you have pain, tightness, tough will. No, the cause of stillness is happiness. Sukhino Chittang Samadhiyati. And I'm going to be mentioning that in this morning's talk about Anapanasati. And Samadhi, Pachaya Yathabhuti Yanadasana, from stillness. That is the cause for seeing things as they truly are. Stillness, Samadhi, Samatha. That calms things down, so then you can see that's the cause of insight, stillness. Example of that? The lake, the pond down there. We call it a pond because we don't have lakes here. We call this a mountain because it's only a hill, but we don't have mountains up here. But it's good enough. So we have the lake down there. Okay, the pond. If there's waves on the surface of that pond, remember the thoughts? If there's waves on the surface of that pond, you cannot see a true reflection of the moon and the stars in the heaven at night time. The reflection is distorted because the lake is not still. But if you're lucky enough to go down there in the evening, maybe after the questions and answers, or get up really early, and you go down there and sit, and there's not a wind at all, and the lake is perfectly still. It's like, you know, the mirror. And you see this perfect reflection of the moon and the stars in the heavens above. Only if it's perfectly still. That is a beautiful analogy for how the mind, only when it's still, can see things as they truly are. To see deeply into them. So the cause of insight, of vipassana, is stillness. Stillness is samatha, but it's not just samatha by will. We have the whole Eightfold Path, all leading to stillness. First of all, you have, you know, a bit of an idea of right view, what this is all about. And then you have this wonderful right intention, or I call it these days motivation. Sometimes people call it right thought, and I thought, my goodness, in all my experience, there's no such thing as right thought. All thought is pretty nasty and deceptive and worrying and giving you headaches. You know what the Buddha actually said about thinking? You know, he gave this really very powerful simile. It's a bit disgusting, but this is what the Buddha said. He said, thinking is like a young man, young woman, you know, dressed up, best clothes, about to go out at night. And then they find there's a garland of dead dog carcasses around their neck. They'd be disgusted at that. And he said, just like a person understands what the mind is truly like, so pure, so peaceful, so still, and they put this garland of thoughts around their mind. And I like the idea of dead, because most of your thoughts are dead ideas about the past. Looking at this present and trying to understand it from your experiences of the past. That's what thoughts are, giving them names, trying to figure it out, trying to capture it, trying to measure it, to have power over it. That is not the way to peace. The Buddha said, it's just like you've got this beautiful mind, and you put all these dead ideas around it. That is called thoughts. So in no uncertain terms, the Buddha was not praising thinking. What he was doing is praising stillness as a path to insight, the wisdom born of stillness. So because of that, are we going to be still? How do we do that? And if you look at the back of Judy's t-shirt, the Jhana Grow t-shirt, you'll see, make peace, be kind, be gentle. That On the back of your t-shirt, I've got your back, Judy. My signature there. That is, where does that come from? It's actually, we really shouldn't say Ajahn Brahm said that, because that's plagiarism. That belongs to the Buddha. That's the second factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. Instead of peace, it's really like renouncing, giving up, letting go. But that's actually how we make peace. Be kind, be gentle. That is part of the Eightfold Path. That is essential for getting stillness. Not make war. Make war to end all wars. Strive to end striving. Put effort so you can be at peace. That is like going down to the lake when there's waves on the surface and smoothing them all out with your hand. Smooth them out. The tops of the waves, pat them down. That makes more waves. You tried that before. It's a whole life, many lifetimes. Never works. It should work at first, but when you actually see deeply, oh yeah, I understand why not. And because you have making peace, being kind, being gentle, you know, you get all your precepts. Keeping precepts is easy if you're making peace. Peace with the people who slam the doors. Peace with the people who snore during the meditation. Peace with the people who chants off key in the morning and evening chanting, that's me. Being kind, whatever it is, when people are just late or whatever, and being gentle. You can see how that calms everything down, makes it peaceful. Have you ever gone to a retreat where the teacher is really tough and wants you to sit up, just stop messing around, don't move, cross your legs, full lotus, back straight, or else? What happens? You get so tense and tight and you're afraid. When you're nice and kind and gentle, you can relax. Peace. So when I'm talking about the monster who's makes you afraid, it's not me. It's you. You're the monster. With all the demands, what you should do. Come on, 2 or 3 days, and all you've done is sleep, talking, eating too much. Drinking too much, you know, not really meditating. Do something. Come on, get your act together. 3 or 4 days left. Come on. The biggest monster is inside of you. So, tell that control freak inside of you, Mara, I know you. Make peace, be kind, be gentle, let go. People are still afraid of letting go. If they let go, they think it's all going to go wrong. It's going to go wrong anyway. No, it doesn't go wrong. You know, once at the interview time, somebody came up to me and they said they had a dream. This is not the joke dreams, this is a real dream. They said they dreamt they were driving in a car. They were the steering wheel under the controls and I was in the passenger seat. And they were heading for this cliff. And I told the driver, I said, let go. We're down to a cliff, I've got a brake. Let go. Take your hands off the steering wheel, feet off the pedals, the other hand off the brake. Let go. And she was terrified. Let go. So she did. In a dream. She took her hand off the steering wheel, feet off the pedals, and we careered over the top of the cliff. Really high speed. And as she looked through the windscreen, she saw the bottom of this really steep cliff. There was a road, but the road had a very sharp right turn. And so, careering down at high speed, she wanted to grab the steering wheel to actually pull it over so that you could turn right if we made it that far. And I said, let go, make peace, be kind, be gentle. And she trusted, she was so happy because she trusted that. And it went really fast at top speed, managed to sort of, you know, keep stable, and we came to the sort of the very sharp right turn, and the car turned right all by itself, and we were travelling along there, no injuries, no problem at all. And I was very proud of her. I said, well done. Now you do that in real life, but not in the traffic, please. This is only a metaphor when you're meditating. But you know, in the dream it was like that conflict between fear, if I don't control, we're going to be injured. And this trust in letting go during meditation, that's so important. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. And then, you know, all of the right so-called efforts. I hate that word effort. It's wayama, and it's just, you know, I'm trying to find a nice word for it. I think endeavor was the one I've settled on so far. And if you look at that, it's all stopping. The effort to say no, to stop, to restrain, to let go, because it goes against the grain. You know, we always do stuff. That is our habit. So to stop that habit and be still, you know, it takes a bit of restraint. Giving up, letting go, stopping. But anyway, then we come to the mindfulness and the stillness. All of that preparation is important for mindfulness and also for stillness. You can't just take mindfulness apart from all its causes. People do that, you know, and they try, I'm going to be mindful. Come on, be mindful. You get more tense. Shut up, I'm trying to be mindful. Get out of my way, I'm trying to be mindful. Of course, it doesn't work. Mindfulness has its causes. And if you force feed it, if you try and make it happen, it just goes pear-shaped. So instead, we know the causes of mindfulness. Which is why at the beginning of Anapanasati Sutta, it says at the beginning, you find a calm place, a quiet place, secluded place. This is why we have jhana growth. You can't make it totally silent. It's pretty quiet. It's secluded, away from many things. And you know, we tried really hard to find a place where you can't get a good signal on your mobile phone. But word gets around, you know where you can get signals these days. It's a black spot. You know, the reason why it's a dark spot for internet is because where the tower is, you go a bit further and you get to the prison. And they actually intentionally blocked out, you know, the telecommunications tower in this direction for more security at the prison. We just happen to be in the way. Thank you. So you can now be reasonably quiet. You know, in the offices there, we have to have a satellite to get the signal. But now, quiet solitude. The next thing is to sit in a comfortable place. Kindness. In other words, you have all these amazing places in this retreat center. You can sit meditation. As many cushions as you want. Please, you know, don't think I have to sit on the floor, otherwise I'll be higher than Ajahn Brahm. That's disrespect. It's disrespect not following my advice. Please sit comfortably. If you need a chair, take a chair. If you need to lean against the wall like a few people are doing, well done. Lean against the wall. And honestly, if you want to put your feet out, fine. If you want to get your own chair, bring it in here. If you want to get a lazy boy where you can push the button and put your legs up. As long as you get good meditation, I'll let you do that. As long as, you know, you get jhanas and stuff. But whatever it takes to make you comfortable place. What's the next thing you do? Is to establish mindfulness as a priority. For goodness sake, it does not mean mindfulness in front of you. Because sometimes, where's me? Front of me? What does that mean? Front of my nose. And then you get what we call nose meditation. You've got to focus in here all the time. And you get stressed out focusing here. Because I was fortunate. I used to have hay fever. I still have hay fever. And so, three months a year, I couldn't watch the breath at the tip of the nose. You know why? There was no breath there. It was stuffed up, blocked. So I thought, I can't meditate. 3 months of the year, I have to take off, do something else. Until someone said, no, watch the breath at your abdomen. Rise and fall. But then, as soon as you became a young monk, I became a monk when I was 23. So when I started watching down here, especially in the afternoon, evenings, oh, I'm hungry. It was right next to my tummy, my stomach. Oh, I want something to eat. So I didn't want to watch down there. I wouldn't watch the rise and fall of the abdomen. I'd watch the emptiness of my stomach. Okay, that's emptiness meditation, but it wasn't very pleasant. So, and then you figured out, The Buddha never said to watch your nose or abdomen. To watch the breath. Establish mindfulness as a priority. Get that together first of all. And again, I've got a lot of respect for the former abbot of this place, Ajahn Chakra, who went to go and see just last year. Because, he sort of told me one day, Ajahn Brahmi, really, really good talking about nimittas and jhanas, and that's really wonderful stuff, and people get very inspired. But, most of the people are down there somewhere. Pay more attention when you're teaching to the basic steps of meditation. And I took that on board. Thank him for that. So, getting mindfulness up in the present moment. Silence. Spend so much time. It's not inspiring stuff. Once I start talking about nimittas and these golden lights and the pleasures better than orgasm and this amazing stuff going on and seeing all this, people love that stuff. Even if they can't do it, but they just love it. But the point is you've got to get there yourself first of all. So the basics. Present moment awareness and silence. Not absolute silence, not absolute present moment, but enough so you can actually be aware of what's happening right now. And that's actually why you develop things like awareness of the pisometer, just awareness of your body to make sure it's all relaxed so you can be calm. What you're doing there, when you follow that sort of initial stage of meditation, what you're doing there is not just looking after your body. That's almost like a little a trick. That's the free gift. What you're really doing is establishing this wonderful mindfulness together with kindness. And because you're feeling the body, and it's important for you, because we're all so paranoid these days about sicknesses and stress and eating this and doing that, it's what your mind eats is more important than what your body eats. Good health. Please excuse me, but it's the mind which is the forerunner and powerful. So if your mind eats good stuff, not negativity, not fear, not ill will, but peace, and so you can actually feel the peace, the relaxation in the body, and the delight in it. It feels really good. At the same time, you're developing a lot of awareness in the moment, because feelings in the body are only now. If you have a trauma or something, sometimes you try and remember the bodily feelings of the past, but most of the body feelings keep you in the present moment, and they keep you pretty silent. That's why, always feel for doctors. Don't say, how are you feeling today? Sick. Yeah, what sickness? I don't feel good. Yeah, but, that doesn't tell me very much, does it? Now, what's the feeling feel like? Is it burning? Is it, I don't know, it hurts. Thanks a lot. I really feel sorry for doctors, because you can't get hardly any symptoms out of a patient because we don't have the vocabulary for that. Men talk about cricket matches and they've got all the vocabulary. Silly mid-off, long on, a six, spin, hit it into cow corner, whatever it is. They've got so much vocabulary for that. The physical body, no, it hurts. So, that's one of the benefits of body awareness. We don't have vocabulary. We don't have names. Which means we can't think too much about it. We just know it. So we feel it. Present moment awareness and silence. And also, great for your health. Now say that psoriasis fellow has got rid of that psoriasis. The lady with arthritis. My own food poisoning. Cancers. Really great stuff, which you can do. And that means it's important. So, when it's important like that. Is that the suicidal spider there trying to find a way in? Okay. Oh, the suicidal spider. It's just only coming to say hello. It's a bug. It's just come to listen to the Dhamma. Even bugs need to know sort of Anapanasati, so they cannot get reborn as a bug anymore. But anyway, so there we are, we're just aware of the body, kind, and it works. You can relax. Then we do the same with our emotional world. So the emotional world is what makes us just go off into the past and future. When you are reasonably relaxed and peaceful, you don't need to think very much. Mm. Rather than the present moment. You know why? Because the present moment is quite enjoyable. Because it's enjoyable, when you let go of all the past and future and you calm down, you like staying here. Peace is nice, pleasant. Many people who, you know, may not have jhana or nimittas, but you come to this place and it's just so peaceful. You just like coming here because it's peaceful. Well, isn't peaceful boring? No, peaceful is delightful. So you start to feel the peace in the body, the peace in the mind. That keeps you in the present moment. That is getting you to be mindful enough so you can start watching the breath. Get the mindfulness up first. And then the breath is so easy to watch. You're peaceful, you're calm, you're content. The contentment has to be there as well, the just happiness in this moment. That it's so easy to watch the breath. So, that is the foundations, the beginnings of Anapanasati. Establishing mindfulness as a priority. Comfortable, quiet, and then you just watch your breath. Well, again, I mentioned yesterday why you watch your breath. How do you watch your breath? People say, well, you know, what am I supposed to do? You've been breathing all your life and you want some instructions on how to do it? It's crazy stuff, isn't it? You've been walking all your life, now you want instructions how to walk in meditation? Eating meditation. Do you want some instructions how to do sleeping meditation? You may have experienced this already. You're up here in the morning, you're meditating, and you fall asleep. Afternoon, evening, you know, do a bit more meditation, you're meditating, you fall asleep. So you go to bed, now I'm tired, and as soon as you go to bed, you can't go asleep. People actually come and tell me that. Look, every time I go to bed at night, I just can't fall asleep. But when I'm in here, I say, well, I see you sleeping in here. And it says the solution is very obvious. When you're actually in this hall, meditating, don't try and meditate, for goodness sake. Don't try and meditate. In this hall, try and fall asleep. Then you stay awake. And when you go to bed at night, you tuck yourself in, try to meditate. Then you go fast asleep. It's not just a joke. It's not just reverse psychology. There's something going on there. Because you're trying to go to sleep, you can't. Because you're trying to meditate, you can't. Both of these are a letting go, a relaxation, allowing things to vanish and disappear. If you try to make it happen, it doesn't. So instead, we're just in this moment, peaceful. And just watch the breath. How do we watch the breath? You know, sometimes, great when people haven't had any instructions before, tell them, okay, close your eyes, watch three breaths, in, out, in, out, in, out, and the end of the third breath, open your eyes. That's what I tell people. And I won't let you do it now because you understand what I'm meaning. After a third breath, they open their eyes and they said, how did you know the breath was going in or going out? How did you know that? I never told you where to watch. So, well, I don't know, I knew. It's quite natural to know you're breathing in or breathing out. So don't complicate it by worrying where it goes in or where it goes out. Just know. So I said, okay, close your eyes and now watch 1,000 breaths. And they start laughing. What's the difference? The difference is, one, we're not counting. And 1,000 breaths, we're really looking at the future. Ooh, I can't do this. So just watch one breath at a time, that's all. Very simple. However it appears, don't control it. Because if you control it, that's when it gets unpleasant. Let it be. And even be kind to your breath. Make peace, be kind, be gentle with your breath. My poor little breath. You know, sometimes, you know, I just still get a little bit of hay fever now and again. So sometimes I'm getting old. So sometimes my poor old breath gets a bit tired. Says, oh, breath, it's okay. I love you, breath. You're my best friend. You know, some friends let you down. My breath has never let me down. So I have this beautiful respect to my breath, kind to my breath. My breath becomes a friend. I never try and control my breath. I never say, okay, go in fast, go in smooth, go in this way, go in that way. If I did that to you, control you. Okay, tomorrow morning, everyone gets up at 3 o'clock. You don't get up at 3 a.m. then, it's not 3 p.m. 3 a.m. you get up, and those people who don't make it into this hall by 3:15, no breakfast or lunch. Real, this really going to go for it. Go for what? You just get stressed out, and most of you will get in your cars and leave, and whatever. That is no way to teach. It's against loving kindness. So please, you look at your breath like a friend. Don't say, right, you're going to go in this way, go in that way, go out that way. Don't ever do that to your breath. Look at your breath like a closest friend. And when that's the case, you see your friend. You don't have to focus or concentrate on your friend. You just hang out with them. You chill out with them. Just like this old friend I met, not this trip to England, a few trips ago to England. I haven't seen him for about 40 years. You know, we were at university together. He was it's really successful in his field. He was an actuary. That's like an accountant, but even more refined, working out insurance risks and stuff. And he was the head one, the most respected one in the whole of Europe. And as soon as we had a nickname for him, which was called Flash. And the reason, because it was, I shouldn't say his full name, I'll get into trouble. His first name was Harold, so it was Flash Harry. And the reason for that was because we were having a party in the college one day, and he was, quite inebriated, drunk. So he went to the toilet and came out and forgot to put his trousers back on. And all the girls saw him, and that was his nickname from then on, Flash. And now, he was the most proper, respected, accountant, actuary in the whole of Europe. And he said, don't tell that story, I jump off. It doesn't matter the stories we used to get up to in those days, just human beings. But it's great, I haven't met him for 40 years. And I'm not really in public I talk a lot, but in private, just now, a few words here and there, but I couldn't stop talking with this guy for about 3 or 4 hours. And just, catching up on things. It was like a good old friend you trusted, spent a lot of time with, and it was just, you enjoyed each other's company. No force. It was just joy, being with a good old friend. And that's the same way I look at my breath. This dear old friend, my breath. So what actually happens is you're sitting there just relaxing and getting peaceful, and the breath comes up. It's like the breath says, hi, Ajahn Brahm. Hi, breath. How are you going? Where you been? Oh, I've been just busy talking and interviewing and stuff. Yeah. Let's hang out together. So we hang out together, my breath and I, really good old friends. No force, no sort of schedules, we just relax in each other's company. That's what I mean by compassion, kindness, respect. Just something like your breathing, that's so important, anapanasati. So me and my breath, the best of friends. We've had such wonderful times together. Remember that time that, we got into jhana together, and that time that, that was wonderful together, and, it's great. My breath and I said, it's wonderful times. Remember that time in the caves in Thailand? That was a good time. We're not talking to one another, we're just enjoying each other's company. Total trust. Have you ever seen another simile? In the shopping centres, you have mothers holding their baby. I thought it was amazing. They hold the baby in the shopping centres, and the baby is fast asleep. Trust the mother 1,000,000%, the mother won't drop it. And never does. That's how you watch your breath. In a busy, whatever it is, your breath knows you won't drop it. So it can really relax. So this is where we learn the attitude we're watching the breath, which is so important. And then what happens? You're just watching the breath. Yeah, first of all, it just goes in and goes out. And then it just goes in a bit more smoothly until you can watch the whole of the breath. Now, I don't know why monks argue about this. The whole body of the breath. It doesn't mean the whole body is a breath, or the whole body, or this physical body. The physical body has been let go of already, just focusing on the breath. And even the Buddha said in the Satipatthana Sutta, that the first four stages when you're observing mindful of the breath, that is body awareness. The breath is part of the body. That's body awareness. By watching the breath, you are doing the first of the Satipatthanas, body awareness. So you're watching the breath go in and out. You don't even need to do anything. It just calms down by itself. Natural, obvious, cause and effect. If you're just sitting here not forcing the issue, just watching the breath go in, go out, go in, go out, of course it will calm down because you're not doing anything. You're not moving, so you don't using any sort of energy with moving your body. But as I said the other night, be careful of your thinking. If you're planning, if you're complaining, if you're wanting, if you're striving, of course, mental striving, that uses up a huge amount of energy. So instead, we're just sitting here, just peaceful, being kind, relaxing in each other's presence. Your metabolism goes down. You don't use so much oxygen. So of course, the breath gets nice and smooth. Breathing in, ah, breathing out. Breathing in, breathing out. Really nice and easy. And somebody was saying yesterday about one of my mates, friends, I think I mentioned him the other day, Ajahn Ganha. And Ajahn Ganha, we know he was a really great monk, but sometimes it's so difficult to get him to do any teachings. And so I said, what was his meditation method? This is what he would say. He'd always say the same thing. It took about 1 minute to actually say, he said, breathe in, sabai. Not just sabai, sabai. And breathe out, sabai. Really sabai. Breathing in, breathing out, oh yeah. I could do this for a while. And he was onto something. He's a great monk. It wasn't a joke, because people breathe in, out, in, out. Come on, you're going to get something out of this. Come on. Long breath, short breath, this breath, that breath, whatever it is. No, make it sabai. Sabai is this Thai word. You don't need to know Thai, but just the whole idea of sabai. You know, you get the meaning. Oh, nice and easy, relaxed, no pressure, chilling out. Taking it easy, laid back, sabai. Do they have a word for that in Chinese? Probably they don't, because Chinese is such a tight culture now in China. We've lost the art of being sabai. English, we've got no word for that. Stiff upper lip. Johnny Gachow, old chap. But not. Sabai. I love that word, sabai. So you breathe in, sabai. You breathe out, sabai. And of course, you're relaxing, so the breath gets very even and peaceful. And that's the first four stages of Anapanasati. See, the whole of the breath, from the beginning to the end. Why? Because it's easy to watch. Have any of you done the walking meditation, and after a while, you can see all the movements in a leg and a foot as you move up. See how it goes forward. How do you walk? Is it lift up, forward and down, like sort of, you know, straight up, straight forward and down? Or is it just what part of your foot leaves first of all naturally? Just don't force it, just notice it. What part goes first and then it goes up? Well, it goes back a bit and then it goes up and down and then down. Find out how you walk. Don't force it, just natural. And then you see all the different parts of a foot just moving. Just how you walk. And there's literally hundreds of thousands of different movements just for one step. Anyone who's had a stroke and has to learn how to walk again knows that. It's so difficult to do. Relearning what you're taking for granted. And all those different movements. Or if you're a dancer, not a belly dancer, that's my career in case I ever need to do anything else. Belly dancer. No, of course you can't do that. Or a sumo wrestler, maybe. No, I'm not aggressive enough to do that. But a real sort of, like a ballet dancer or dancer, they have to be so aware of just all the different movements, you know, of the feet or the body as it moves. And that's what we do with walking meditation. Get really aware of your body. And so it's like a whole continuous movement, not left, right, left, right, left, right, but just how the left foot moves and goes down. It gets really interesting and also delightful as well. So you get this first stage, the first four stages, which is body awareness, the first Satipatthana completed. Awareness of the body. And then, as you go to the next four stages of Anapanasati, it is called Vedananusati, experience of the experiences of breathing. Vedana. Because what happens next is you're not so aware of the breath. You're aware of how it feels, the delight of a breath, experiencing pity and sukha, this joy and pleasure, the happiness, and then just experience this whole jitta sankhara. This comes from the mind. You're not feeling the you're not experiencing the breath through the body now. The joy, the happiness is coming from the mind. That's where it's coming from. It's a mind-made pleasure. Remember what I was saying about all those pieces of bamboo see the world in a grain of sand? I'm not going to go into detail there, but in the middle toilet over in the men's there, see the most beautiful, the most gorgeous, most fragrant piece of excrement I've ever seen in my life. You see the whole story later on. If you're really into that, I love telling that story. Just my nature, just to gross people out. But it's a point of that story was actually that it was beautiful. You know, sincerely fragrant and incredibly gorgeous. It was a mind-made sankhara. I actually added that on because my mind was just so powerful and beautiful. You could look at something which is usually disgusting and see it as just the most wonderful thing. It taught me a lot. Even with the breath, what happens is it is the mind which makes the breath so delightful. The Vedana, the second Satipatthana. The world is not ugly or beautiful, it's what the mind adds onto it. Great insight, which means anything can be just so much fun and so much joy. It's not the meditation, not the teacher, it's not Mr. Trump is the problem, it's the way you perceive him. He's just a gorgeous, wonderful individual. You see how stuck we are in perceptions and ideas and views? Look, if a piece of Eskimo could look beautiful, Mr. Trump's an easy thing to do. So what are we what we're doing there, we're challenging a lot of our perceptions. But this is what happens naturally. You're watching the breath and it just gets so delightful. Oh, breathing in, breathing out. Are you really watching the breath? No, actually, you're watching the joy. It's the second Satipatthana. And this is really important for people to say, because say, I'm not watching the breath anymore. Exactly. You're not supposed to be watching the breath all the way into enlightenment. You know, as I say to people, you know, most of you came from overseas or interstate. You know, you had to go in an aircraft, first of all. But the aircraft couldn't land in Jhana Grove. We haven't got a runway. It lands at the airport. You can only take the aircraft as far as an aircraft can go. Then you've got to go in the car. And you can't drive the car into your bedroom. You take it to the car park, that's as far as a car can go. You've got to get out, and then you wear your shoes. And you wear your shoes as far as the entrance to this meditation hall, that's as far as shoes are allowed, and you take them off, and then you come in barefoot. These are different vehicles. And each vehicle can only take you so far. The breath only takes you to that point, then you get out your breath, and you go to the joy, the feeling. This is an important part of meditation. You have to know how to deal with those pity and sukha, the joys, the emotional part of meditation. Sometimes people get a bit afraid of the great joys which come in meditation. You know why? Because you can't control it. Breath maybe you can control, you know, if you really want to, you can stop the breath and breathe in fast. But joy is a little bit out of control. That's why people are so scared of it. And I'm now going to be gender discriminatory. At this point, this is anecdotes, my experience, now no sort of reason for this, but most times female meditators have a better time, easier time at this stage of Anapanasati. Okay, it's gender specific, but it's true. I mean, sometimes females get into really deeper meditation here because they're not so afraid. They're more accustomed to emotional worlds and how to deal with emotions, even really strong emotions. But, you know, guys can as well. It's not sort of always 100%. But you have to feel the breath, know it, enjoy it. Not sort of contemplate it or control it or judge it or name it. Give up that judging. You feel the beautiful breath. Oh, breathing in sabai. Oh, yeah. Because sometimes guys or anyone who's been trained to be discriminatory will start to say, well, what am I supposed to do now? Is this right? You know, should it be more joy or less joy? Or is this, you know, how am I supposed to be washing the bed? Oh, shut up. Enjoy it. What is wrong with enjoying meditating? Crazy people say, oh, you get attached. If you enjoy meditation, you get attached. Be careful. Red flag. Come on. The Buddha said, I always have to quote this, Pathādhika Sutta, if you start enjoying and indulging in the joys of the mind, especially the joys of deep meditation, if you attached to them, and the word he was anuyoga, which is like tied along with them, tied up with them, if you get attached to the joys of deep meditation, what are you going to find? There's only four possibilities if you get attached to the joys of meditation. Streamlining, once returning, non-returning, or full enlightenment. That's what you're supposed to get. So it's not a danger. It's actually what you're supposed to be doing. Getting joy and happiness. And this is a part of Anapanasati where you really have. And it's also completing the second satipatthana, mindfulness of the Vedana, of the emotional quality of the joy, the happiness of these experiences. Isn't that nice? You're having a good time and you're getting enlightened at the same time. Win-win. I don't know why more people, actually is why, it's very hard to get in these retreats, because it's fun. Deeply profound, meaningful joy. So breathing in, breathing out, oh, this is really nice. For your walking meditation, though, so peaceful, so joyful. And then you get to the next part, the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th stages of Anapanasati, where you experience the jitta. And of course, this is all about the third satipatthana, the cittanupassana, or the mindful of the being aware of the mind, getting to know it, experience it. How do you know what the mind is? Of course, people have all these theories of what the mind is. Some people say it doesn't exist. It's just a byproduct of the brain, an epiphenomena of the neural system. That doesn't make any sense at all, especially when your brain stops, when it's not functioning anymore, and you're still perfectly aware. So, this is what happens. The breath gets so joyful, so beautiful. And, you know, you're still breathing in and out, but the joy is what you're focusing on. Just gorgeous, beautiful, breathing. Oh, sabah. And then the breath vanishes from your consciousness, your awareness. It falls off the screen. And in its place, you get to the juicy part of meditation, where people love listening to this, the nimittas. Beautiful lights in the mind. Wow. You're all paying attention now. You know when I was saying watching the breath, some of you are looking down, but when you get to nimittas, that's really cool stuff. And what is that? That's anapanasati. You're still breathing in and breathing out, but you're experiencing the jitter. And sometimes people come up and they tell me, Ajahn Brahm, there is. Buddha never talked about nimittas. And I go, ooh. Upakalesa Sutta, 1-2-8 of Majjhima Nikaya. It's all about the problems with the nimittas. Is that, unfortunately, you've got to be careful, translations. I did tell Bhikkhu Bodhi off about this. He said, it's in the footnote. Yeah, but people don't look at footnotes. And it's just there, you know, it's all the different problems with dealing with nimittas in meditation. Upakalesa Sutta. I think Bhikkhu Bodhi translates it, and, you know, you don't manage to sort of really get into that thing. That thing in the footnote means nimitta. Kind of just put nimitta up there just to make sure that people know that this is how the Buddha taught. So this is, the nimitta is a sign of the mind. It's how you experience it. Like looking at your face in a mirror. What you're seeing there is the image of your face. It's not real face, but it's how you experience a face. And this is what you're doing with these nimittas. And these nimittas get really interesting. And as you play around, develop these nimittas, lots of joy and lots of energy, lots of stillness. This is where you fulfill the third satipatthana. Understanding the mind. Really hard to get similes as usual, but the simile of the emperor. There was an emperor. And the emperor would only appear in public on very few occasions. When the emperor appeared in public, that emperor was dressed up in 5 pieces of clothing, which covered every square millimeter of the emperor's body. Had huge boots which went up to the thighs. I almost said his, because we don't know if the emperor was a he or a she or a lesbian, gay, transgender. I missed a few out, I think. Anyway. But they didn't know what the emperor was, whether it was Sri Lankan or Thai or US or North Korean or whatever, because they never saw the emperor. All they saw was the big coverings, like boots up to the thighs, trousers, you know, down to the edge of the overhanging the boots, a big jacket which overlapped the top of the trousers, huge gloves which covered the sleeves of the jacket, and a big helmet which covered the top of the jacket. Now, because, you know, this was after my time, Star Wars, people said that was Darth Vader. Darth Vader? 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 It's Star Wars. Vader. It's Star Wars. So apparently no one ever saw him or her or whatever it was inside his big hood. Is that right? Okay, I trust my monks to fill me in on all the lost years of my monk's life. Anyway, it's just like this emperor, and no one knew exactly what was inside. Had all these theories, but no one really knew. Because the only time you saw this emperor covered with 5 pieces of clothing, like your jitter, the mind, always covered with the five senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. You never know what this mind is because it's covered up with these five things. You may assume and have theories. But how do you know, this is the Buddha simile now, how do you know what gold is? You have to purify gold, take all of the other impurities out of the gold, 100% pure gold, and then the chemist can find out its properties. The mind is the same. Pure 100% citta mind, no other impurities, then you can find out what it is. Take off the clothes of the emperor. No helmet, no jacket, no gloves, no trousers, no boots. See what this emperor really is. The citta, the mind. It's an emperor because it's in control of so powerful, so many things. Find out what the citta is. And this is what the job of the third Satipatthana is. But you've got to uncover the citta first of all to do it properly. And this is what that jhana is all about. First of all, the nimitta comes up, and then you stabilize the nimitta, you give it sort of power, you brighten it up, it gets really brilliant, very powerful, incredibly joyful. That's what's going to happen. More bliss than you've ever had in your life. Woohoo! Now you're really flying. But you know, it takes a lot of skill to take so much pleasure. People think that monks and nuns, we're weird. Even, who was it? I think one of the monks, you know, went to a hospital the other day, and I think the nurse or somebody says, well, is it really true you monks, nuns, don't have any sex? I said, yeah. How can you stand it? 20, 30, 40 years without having sex? How can you stand it? 20, 30, 40 years without having jhanas? How'd you stand that? So, this is the answer I should have told this monk. So, what happens? You get really blissed out. Really nice bliss. And then, so the nimitta just gets so strong, so brilliant, so powerful. And of course, you know, you're not worried about time. Thinking, just, you can't think at these stages. It's, how can you really think and take notes and stuff like that, you know, when you're having the biggest experience of your life? And so, sorry, of your lives. And so then you merge into that, go right inside. And that becomes the jhanas. That is the 12th stage of Anapanasati. We're mocheyam jitang, liberating the jitta, the mind. Now you can have some idea of what this mind really is. No theories anymore. Personal, direct experience. And then afterwards, when you emerge out of those deep meditations, so powerful, so strong, your mindfulness now really, really strong and stable and penetrating, then you can start to understand the nature of things as they truly are. Insight, wisdom, to see anicca, which is not just things rising and falling. That's so easy to do. Anyone can go down to that lake down there and see the waves come up and the waves go down. But what anicca is, it's like you're sitting by that lake. Sorry, pond. Sitting by the pond. And the whole pond vanishes. It disappears. It's gone. Together with all the water and the sky above it, the trees, the bushes, the banks, it all vanishes. Disappears. And it's not supposed to do that. That's weird. But that's anicca. Data which is totally unexpected, which changes your whole idea and some views of what this world is. To see anicca, see it fade away, disappear, vimaga. See it cease. gone. And lastly, to see how all gets let go. Not just what's outside there, but what's inside as well. Nothing here. And that's a wonderful place to stop. Episode 2 will come tomorrow. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so tomorrow I'll go back to the